Jaya Radha Madhava Kundabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kundabihari. Gopi Dana Balava Giribanadari. Gopi Dana Balava Giribanadari. Soda na na na, braja dana ranjana. Ya soda na na na, braja dana ranjana. Ya muna kirha vanachari. Yamuna Tirha Vanacharya. Jaya Radha Madhava Kundabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kundabihari. Gopi Dana Balava Giribanadari. Gopi Dana Balava Giribanadari. Yasoda na 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 braja dana ranjana. Yasoda na 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 braja dana ranjana. Yamuna Tirha Vanacharya. Yamuna Tirha Vanacharya. Jaya Radha Madhava Kundabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kundabihari. Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parabhidakasharya Asadhara Sadushi Sriman. His Divine Grace Shalesi Bhaktivedanta Swamira Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande, all glories to the sound devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Mom Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthai Bhutai, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Sarasvatundeve, Gauravani Vicharne, Nirvishesha, Srinivadi Paskatyade, Vitarne. Om Agyana Tivanandasya, Gyananjana Salakaya, Chaksur Unilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Bandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Pada Kamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Scha Shri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Vrijana Saitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padam, Sahagana Lalita, Shiva Sakhan Svitamscha, Hey Krishna Karna Sindo, Dinabando Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Tapta Kanchena Gorangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Prishubhanu Sutta Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vancha Kapa Trubhyascha, Kripa Sinubhyevacha, Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 51, The Deliverance of Muchakunda, Text Number 31. Vayam tu purusha purusha vyagra akshvaka kshatra bandavaha muchukunda iti prokto yo yauva nashvatmaja prabhu Vayam tu purusha vyagra akshvaka kshatra bandavaha muchukunda iti prokto yovanashvatmaja prabho Vayam We, two, on the other hand, Purusha, among men, Vyagra, O tiger, Akshvaka, descendants of Ikshvaku, Kshatra, of Kshatriyas, Bandhavaha, Family members, Muchukunda, iti, thus, prokta, called, Yauvanashva, of Yauvanashva, Mandata, the son of Yuvanashva. Atmaja, the son, Prabho, O Lord. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As for ourselves, O tiger among men, we belong to a family of fallen Kshatriyas, descendants of King Ikshvaku. My name is Muchukunda, my Lord, and I am the son of Yauvanashva. Please repeat. As for ourselves, O tiger among men, we belong to a family of fallen Kshatriyas, descendants of King Ikshvaku. My name is Muchukunda, my Lord, and I am the son of Yauvanashva. Purport. It is common in Vedic culture that a Kshatriya will humbly introduce himself as Kshatrabandha or Kshatrabandhu, a mere relative in a Kshatriya family, or in other words, a fallen Kshatriya. In ancient Vedic culture, to claim a particular status on the basis of one's family relations was itself indicative of a fallen position. Kshatriyas and Brahmanas should be given status according to their merit, by their qualities and work and character. When the caste system in India became degraded, people proudly claimed to be relatives of Kshatriyas or Brahmanas, although in the past such a claim, unaccompanied by tangible qualifications, indicated a fallen position. So the text again. Vayam tu purusha vyagra aikshvaka kshatra bandavaha mujukunda iti proto yavanashvatmaja prabho. As for ourselves, O tiger among men, we belong to a family of fallen kshatriyas, descendants of King Ikshvaku. My name is Muchukunda, my lord. I am the son of Yauvanashva. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Puristaya Bhutai, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Sarasutam Deve, Gauravani Bracharane, Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatyade Siddharana. Interesting enough that this is dealing with seemingly a mundane topic. The Varna and Ashram system, which is generally considered quite primitive in modern society. Now that everyone has become liberated to do whatever they want, the only rule and regulation is that there are no rules and regulations. If you're a man, you want to be a woman, well, that's all right. And if you're a woman, you want to be a man, that's all right. That's normal. And if you're a woman or a man, you want to be a cat or a dog, well, that's your right, because everything, whatever you want to do is particularly, we have our freedom. But the Vedic culture did not allow such freedom, and that people can't understand. Just like it says, Ite vidu swartikatim hi Vishnu, darashaya ye bahir artamanina. People don't know that the aim of life is to obtain Krishna or Vishnu. And therefore they accept something which is rather insignificant as something, the primary purpose of their life. Especially in Kali Yuga, when there is hardly any dharma, any actual knowledge of religious principles, there's hardly any understanding of how the laws of material nature work, and what to speak of the purpose of life being moksha, to get out of the bodily concept of life, to obtain the spiritual concept of life. People are only interested, for the most part, in so-called economic development, which they actually have very little idea what that even means. They think that manufacturers some plastic and metal vehicle is economic development. And they don't even know what sense gratification is, because they have no knowledge, well, they have very little knowledge, and therefore even they're only interested in so-called economic development for sense gratification. They don't even know what real economic development is, because they're lacking knowledge. They're lacking knowledge of how the material nature works. And therefore they don't even know what sense gratification is. So though they think they've given up religiosity, they think that their moksha means to have an extra day off for a holiday. That's their moksha. They get a 3-day weekend. Because even economic development means to make, ultimately, to have nice food, fresh food, organic, non-GMO food, offered to God, fresh, to have a peaceful life where one can sleep peacefully, have some shelter, to have nice relationships with others, and to feel protected, free from anxiety. that today I have $100,000 in the bank, and by some manipulation, my $100,000 will be worth $5 tomorrow. Or I'll wake up and I'll, instead of having $100,000 in the bank, I'll owe the bank somehow or another $100,000 for having put my money in their bank. And that's possible. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, when people have very little understanding of what actual is reality, they have no idea what their duty is. The very concept of duty is practically not even there. They think they have not so much obligations, they have the government or or others owe them something. They want to know what their rights are. They don't know want to know what their duties are. And therefore, Bhagavad Gita, from the very beginning, when it talks about the difference between matter and spirit, people don't take generally very much note of that. That Krishna has explained so nicely how the body is changing, but our cells within the body were not changing. That's a nice concept, and maybe some people will actually appreciate it. What Krishna is saying in the rest of the Bhagavad Gita is rather a mystery for most people. But when Krishna talks about the idea of duty, chatura, vanya, maya, shistam, guna, karma, vibhaga, shaha, tasya kartaram, apimam, vidya kartaram, avyam. They think it's something mundane Krishna is talking about, that there's some caste system in some primitive society called India where you're born into a certain caste. You're cast into a caste. And you have to slave. There is a few kings and a few of their Brahmins, so-called Brahmins, who just kind of sit around in court and just talk about all kinds of nonsense, about demigods and things, and gods. And there's a few Vaishyas cheating everyone else, and everyone else is a Shudra, working hard for everyone else, getting hardly any pay, but just told you've been cast into this caste and you must stay there. But I want to do something else. Ah, beware of the power of the king. So people think like that. They have no idea about the soul and that this life is only one life. Just like I was the other day, we were figuring out how long is Brahma's 1 second in our, how many years of our years will it take to make up 1 second in Brahma's life? Does anyone know? Yes. 8 years in a second of Brahma. No, it's quite a bit more than 8 years. It's 100,000 of our years is 1 second of Brahma's life. Approximately, it's 96,000 years or something. You take 8,311,040,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, 3 trillion something. And then you divide that by 12, you divide that by 30, you divide that by 24, you divide that by 60, you divide that by 60, and you get approximately 96,000. So 1 second in Brahma's life is 96,000. Approximately 1,000 of our lifetimes take place in Brahma's 1 second. Therefore, life is quite a continuum. We're worried, oh, it's so long, another year. Brahma, it said in one nimesha, one fraction of a second, after stealing Krishna's cowherd boys, he came back because he was worried about what he had done, that he was playing mischief with Krishna's cowherd boys and calves. So that one nimesha was only 1/96,000th of a second for him. In other words, he hardly took off before he came back. We can appreciate Brahma changed his mind. We generally don't change our minds so quickly. But actually, this is one, life is supposed to be progressive. And as people generally don't have the opportunity to take directly to devotional service, and even if they do have that opportunity, rarely they take it up, especially in other ages. Society is geared towards a gradual progression. And even as we can see, we think devotional service is a gradual progression. Oh, it's going too slow. I've already been in the movement for 20 years. And how is it possible I'm not an Uttama Adhikara yet? How is it possible when I chant Hare Krishna, Krishna doesn't come before me dancing? I'm so sincere. I've worked so hard for so many years. So we don't, for us, time is, we have a rather unusual, or the demigods will see our perspective on time is rather unusual. Because even Brahma's 311 trillion, 40 billion years of his life is only one exhalation of Mahavishnu, who's an expansion of an expansion of a partial expansion of Lord Balaram, who is an expansion of Krishna. So what to speak of, if you sneeze in the material world, in the spiritual world, how many millions of Brahmas have come and disappeared during the sneeze? What to speak of our insignificant conception of time? In any case, generally, progress is a gradual progress, and it goes through karma yoga, jnana yoga, astanga yoga, and finally one can understand the value of bhakti yoga. Of course, we're not going to go through the process of karma yoga, dutiful activities, of which being a shudra, a vaishya, a kshatriya, a brahmana, through many lifetimes. Until one finally realizes, actually, I'm not this body. So how does one realize he's not the body? Because he becomes detached from his own objectives, he becomes dutiful. The material world means we, whatever body we get, we become attached to utilizing it for our own objectives. And generally, everyone has the same objective. I want to be God. Everyone has their God project. Of course, no polite people don't say they want to become God. They just act as if they're God. That I am the controller. Although I may not be able to be the supreme controller right now of everything, but I'm controlling something. I have my house, I have my family, I have my bank balance. These are mine. And I am what I am. And there may be other so-called gods with more or less than I have, but we'll compete, and eventually, by the end of time immemorial, I'll come out on top. It's just this gradual progress I'm making. I'm learning how to be God, after all. To be God is not easy. It may take me a few hundred trillion lifetimes to learn, but I'm patient. I've been here since time immemorial. And I'll stay here from now until time immemorial until I finally figure out how to actually become the Supreme Lord and everyone surrenders to me forever. Then everything will go on all right. But there's a gradual progress in these, in karma yoga of dutiful activities. So eventually, prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudatma kartahim iti manyate. Bewildered by the three modes, the ignorant, those who are bewildered by the three modes, they think themselves to be the doer of the activities which are actually carried out by the three modes of material nature. So by dutiful activities, one gradually rises up as one becomes more and more dutiful in one's activities, and then one realizes, I'm not the body, I'm actually a spiritual soul, and that one becomes liberated. Such a liberation may stop there, or it may continue on to the jnana yoga, astanga yoga, and it may continue on to the, ultimately, to the bhakti yoga concept that I'm not only not the body, but I'm also a servant of Krishna's servants, and ultimately the Supreme Person. That becomes one's dutiful activity. So, Actual real duty is anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmida vritam anukulena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. The ultimate duty of the soul is to understand what Krishna wants us to do and to do those activities to please him without any other motivation and to do it without any deviation. That's uttama bhakti, which is the ultimate duty of the soul, the real duty of the soul. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, surprisingly, he mentions two different things, two verses twice. One of them is manmana bhava madbhaktu makto madhyaji namamaskuru mamai vaishyasi yuktaiva or satyam te pratijani priyosi me. So twice Krishna mentions we should always think about him, we should become his devotee, we should worship him, we should offer our obeisances to him. So this seems rather logical that Krishna would want us, and then he says we should surrender to him. Unless we think about him, unless we become his devotee, unless we worship him, unless we become humble before him, then why would we want to surrender to him? You don't just surrender to anyone. You have to become aware of the person before you can surrender to him. And Krishna will not reveal himself to us unless we go through the process of bhakti yoga. Bhakti mam abhijananti yavanyas chasmitatvataha. So we can do our activities dutifully for him and fix our mind upon him. But there has to be more than just fixing the mind upon Krishna. It has to be done in the attitude of service and worship. And it has to be done ultimately realizing how wonderful Krishna is. If we realize, if we fix our mind upon Krishna through our activities, we do our worship of him in bhakti yoga, we become his devotee, and then we'll realize how wonderful Krishna is, and therefore we'll always feel ourselves meek and humble. And therefore, we'll, whatever he wants us to do, we'll do with great enthusiasm, because we'll know that's ultimately good for everyone. It'll be pleasing to everyone, not only to Krishna, but it'll be pleasing to myself and everyone else. So it's quite logical Krishna has repeated this twice in Bhagavad Gita, because it's obviously the essential point of Bhagavad Gita. But then again, he repeats another verse, Shreyo swadamo viguna para dharma sunusita, shrey dharme nijayam bhaya para dharma bhayavaha. It is better to perform one's own duty imperfectly than to perform another's duty, even though it may be done perfectly. Destruction, the cause of one's own duties, is better because to follow another person's duties is dangerous. So this is actually repeated twice. There's only 700 verses in Bhagavad Gita, which is the summary of all the Vedic literature. So it would seem that so many other verses would be more important to repeat twice, but no, Krishna repeats this verse twice. Because it's essential, even in pure devotional service, we find out what we were supposed to do. The material world is an imitation where we do whatever our mind tells us to do, which may not be in harmony with either Krishna or even his material nature. It may not be what we're actually supposed to be doing. It may just be a mental concoction. And because of our mental concoctions, because of our serving our mental concoctions, therefore we take birth again and again in the material world, serving whatever comes to our mind. Mental concoction doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Our imagination doesn't mean it doesn't exist. It means it's not what Krishna wants us to do. It's not what the material nature is demanding that we do. It's what my mind is coming up with as my so-called purpose of life, my so-called duty, what I'm going to do. And this simply puts us into one material situation after another and a bewildered conception of life. Therefore, one's first business is to find out at least what the material nature is demanding that I do. And more important than that, what actually the material nature, what the purpose of what I'm doing is, which is ultimately Krishna has given us instructions what we're supposed to be doing, for instance, as devotees. And in the Vedic liturgy, he gives duties according to the modes of nature one is currently situated under. So everyone, according to their mode of nature they're currently situated, there's a certain duty for them to do. Otherwise, they'll be acting sinfully. Arjuna, he was a Kshatriya, he wanted to act like a Brahmin. Krishna didn't agree. There are Brahmins, they act like Shudras, and therefore they become fallen. Everyone should act according to their actual duty, and the government would see that everyone is acting according to their duty and provide opportunities. Of course, luckily, the duties that are prescribed for people make sense. Like, most people should be growing food because most people want to eat. They want to eat, but they don't want to grow food. They want to make computers. At least if they made edible computers, it would make sense. So when they run out of food, they can eat their computer. Strawberry covering. We don't recommend chocolate. You'd have a vanilla keyboard. So at least it would be practical. But no, they don't want to grow food. They think, oh, this is very lowly, primitive to grow food. We want to eat the food, but we don't want to grow it. And therefore, they wind up with all kinds of something which isn't so-called food, but there's no nutrition in it, there's no energy, there's no prana. It just looks like food. But because they're bewildered by the material nature, they think it's food. Because they're acting sinfully, they don't want to accept their actual position, and therefore the material nature reciprocates with them. They want to be an illusion, so they get illusory food, which is filled with chemicals, pesticides, insecticides, herbicides, genetically modified. Soon the food will, you'll have a carrot and it'll just get up and walk out of your kitchen. If you don't hit it enough times with your knife, it just gets up and walks out. Because people want to be cheated, and therefore the material nature is cheating them. But actually, we're supposed to find out what our duty is. Of course, even as devotees, we have a certain duty. Not that everyone should do the same duty. We want, or everyone, Krishna is telling everyone to do the same thing. There may be different, Krishna wants to engage us differently. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told Vaninath Rai that he should stay in the government service and he should serve the king. He told Ramananda Rai he should retire and come with him and hear and chant about Krishna. He told another of Bhavananda Rai's sons he should stay in the temple and worship the deity. Oh, actually, it was Gopinath Acharya that he told to serve the government. He told Vaidyanath Roy to stay in the temple, worship the deity. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't say, well, we're all spiritual souls, just do whatever you want, it's cool. He knew the propensities of his servants and he engaged them accordingly. Not everyone was his personal servant, not everyone was a preacher in his movement. But some of them were, some of them were householders, some of them were preachers, everyone. But they all had one aim of life, that is to please Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to please Krishna. So one should have no other goal of life to please Krishna, but one has to find out what I can do to please Krishna. And that may be different for different persons. But patram pushpam phalam toyam, yome bhakta priyachati, taraham bhakti uparitam, ashnami priyatatmanaha. Anything done to please Krishna, which is authorized, and which actually pleases Krishna, makes one's life successful. Not that everyone should just, as Prabhupada said, I am a multi-millionaire, and I have millions of dollars, but Krishna says, patram pushpam phalam toyam, just offer me a leaf. So this is a very good process. So I'll go out and buy a few leaves, keep my money in my bank, and come to the temple and offer some leaves that fell in front of the temple and offer them to Krishna and expect to become a multi-billionaire soon because of my offering of leaves. I'll do it with devotion. Oh, God, you're so wonderful. You're so kind and generous. You give even wealthy people more and more money. Here's some leaves. I'll check my bank balance tomorrow. And if it increases, I'll come tomorrow and offer you some more leaves. I have a whole bunch of leaves stacked up outside. No, Krishna knows this is for the poorest of men who have nothing to offer to Krishna, but their love, and Krishna will accept that. But one who has material means, they should offer those material means in the service of Krishna. Therefore, etam sushushitam brahmams tapa trayati kishitam. Yet Ishvare Brahmani Karmani Bravati Bhavitaha. Therefore, in that purport where Krishna is, where I guess it's Shukadeva Goswami. He's saying that whatever you have, you offer that to Krishna. And then it becomes the source of your liberation. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that if you're a Brahmin, that you act like a Brahmin. That is, in this age, of course, no one by birth is a Brahmin. But if you have a tendency to want to study and investigate and hear and chant, then you utilize that tendency for knowledge and you prove Krishna is God. You preach the Sankirtan movement. You don't have to have officially a sacred thread, but if you're a preacher, if you're studying the Vedic literature, and you reach the conclusion that Krishna is God, and you preach that message, that's what Brahman means. You're dealing with Brahman, the Supreme Brahman. And if you have a tendency to organize things, like Arjuna was an organizer, he fought for Krishna's cause, and you fight, you organize things, you make the arrangements, so that Krishna's consciousness becomes successful. Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtan. You don't fight to create your own little kingdom where you're the supreme. And if you're a Vaishya, you have means, you're able to accumulate material nature, you utilize that in the Sankirtan movement. So books are distributed, prasadam is distributed, the holy name is distributed, so that the managers have something to work with, to organize, and the preachers have something to show and also to utilize in their preaching. But then Prabhupada writes at the end of the purport that after all, the best thing is to hear and chant about Krishna, that we're not simply manipulating material nature to make a show, we're utilizing things in Krishna's service, and by doing that, eventually when we chant Hare Krishna, we'll directly experience Krishna. When we hear about Krishna, we'll directly experience Krishna because we'll come to the spiritual platform. That we follow the duty, utilize our energies correctly, but do it for Krishna, to please Krishna. And that's the beginning. We practice sadhana bhakti. We know we're supposed to chant Hare Krishna. We're not chanting Om Shivaya Namaha. We're chanting Hare Krishna because that's what the acharyas have given us. If we start chanting Om Shivaya Namaha, then we become fallen because we're outside of the disciple succession. It's not what our acharyas have asked us to chant. And at the same time, we're not engaged in the Varnashram system, so we can't claim that we're gradually making progress towards chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Neither we're chanting Hare Krishna, nor can we chant Om Shivaya Namaha correctly. Therefore, we become outside the proper duty. So we may take our acharyas lightly, the instructions coming down through the disciple succession, and become very creative in our approach to distributing Krishna consciousness. But we might wind ourselves in difficulty. Prabhupada said, if you want to catch the big fish, make sure you don't get wet. I remember one time in Buffalo, 69, when Prabhupada came to visit us, Rupanuga Prabhu, and opened the temple in 68. And at that time, there was not very much communication, but whatever we heard, we just took as something you could do, because
after all, you know, it was all related to Krishna. We had no books. We didn't even have the blue Bhagavad Gita when I moved in, the little condensed version. We only had Prabhupada's original Srimad Bhagavatams. And therefore, whatever we heard from anyone, from any of the devotees anywhere around the world, it wasn't even around the world, just in America, we took it as something like you could do. So we were chanting all kinds of things. Yo, that sounds good. Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Because that's in Gopala, Gopala, Yasamadi Nandana, Gopala. So Prabhupada came, and we were chanting the mantras, and Prabhupada heard them, of course, because we thought, you know, Hare Krishna, or we also had Govinda, Jai Jai, Gopala, Jai Jai, Radha, Radha, Ramani, Govinda. So we were chanting all of them, so Prabhupada didn't like that. He liked the Hare Krishna mantra, he liked Sri Krishna Chaitanya, he liked Govinda Jai Jai, but he said these other things. He said this is not what our acharyas have chanted, and we should not, you know, it's not, generally we don't chant those things. When Prabhupada said generally we don't chant, it means don't chant it. Well, Prabhupada said generally, so once a year, you know. Prabhupada was trying to be a little polite sometimes. We didn't necessarily come from a cultured background where people were polite. And therefore, Prabhupada would say something like, you know, we even when Prabhupada's presence, you know, Radhe, what was that? Jaya Jaya Radhe, Radhe. Prabhupada would stop it a few times, and then the devotee, you know, after some time, Prabhupada just gets tired of trying to stop people from doing things that even he introduced, you know, the proper melody for the Mangala Arati. He introduced it sometimes, but after a while, what could he do? Cover everyone's mouth in the movement as soon as they did something wrong. So there's a standard, and Prabhupada expected us to follow the standard as he followed the standard. We may not know why the standard's there, just like for Mangala Arati, there's a certain melody. Because Krishna likes that melody, he's in a certain mood. He's not in the mode of passion, ignorance like we are. And therefore, when we chant something else, it's generally due to because we're in passion, ignorance. We chant the Mangala Arati as if, you know, it's the midday arati. You know, wake up, Krishna. Get moving. We got a lot of work to do today. Stop playing the flute. Do something practical. Unless you can get a job as a musician. So we may be in that mood. But there's a certain mood that Krishna is in, and we're supposed to follow his mood. And therefore, the acharyas have told us how to properly follow his mood. Then we'll be more pleasing to him. Of course, if we chant Mangala Arati as if it was midday, he'll still be pleased because he knows where our consciousness is. And therefore, he probably accepts, he's so kind, he accepts whatever we can do for him. He knows we're 99.9% crazy, and therefore because we're doing something, he accepts it. But he expects in the course of time, we'll become more interested in finding out what his mood is and what's actually most pleasing to him. That will be progress in the course of time. And what to speak of doing it just to please him without any other motivation. Doing it uninterruptedly, according to what is actually he wants, and doing it just to please him. So that's progress in devotional service. That is our progress. But in this age, he's very kind as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He knows that ultimately what's most pleasing to him is not exactly if we just sing the proper melody of the Mangala Arati. What's most pleasing to him is if we work seriously to bring his other children back to the spiritual kingdom. That's what he really wants. He wants everyone, all the living entities, eventually to go back to the spiritual world, to revive their eternal loving relationship with him. So we're participating in that. There may be some discrepancies here and there, and Krishna will undoubtedly overlook them and see the service we're doing for the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But we're not going to Vana and Ashram system is manifested within this world, we're not, you know, probably going to be, well, we can't imitate, because right now there is no Varna Ashram system, so therefore these verses we don't take very seriously, nor do we take our duty so seriously sometimes. We don't really even try to figure out what Krishna wants us to do before we do it. We do it and we hope for the best. We do what we want to do and hope Krishna likes it. If he doesn't, what to do? So that we have to understand how it, the duties come all the way into our, even in the spiritual world there are duties. Radharani doesn't act like a cowherd boy. She doesn't wrestle with Krishna as far as I know. Nor do the cowherd boys act like Radharani, Srimati Radharani. Nor does Mother Jasoda, suddenly develop a conjugal relationship with Krishna, because it's higher than simply Vatsalya. After all, we're spiritual and we have free wills there. No, so there's duties there. Mother Jasoda's cooking and cleaning. Nanda Maharaj is supervising. There are duties there. Not that I'm a spiritual soul, I'm liberated from the material concept of life. You know, I don't want to be an old, a coward man for the rest of my existence. I got to make some progress here. I always wanted to cook eternally, so I give up being Nanda Maharaj and I become a cook. No, there are duties even in the spiritual world that are done eternally, what to speak of here. So that we have to enter into, and what to speak of just doing it to please Krishna rather than for our sense gratification. In any case, we should not imitate other people's duties, look around and see what everyone else is doing. Someone else is chanting Mangalarti in a certain way, and therefore it's authorized because they're a devotee, and therefore I can do it too. So I heard, even when Prabhupada was here, there were so many Prabhupada said, we wouldn't check out. Just someone had to say the Prabhupada said, although it sometimes would make no sense, but because the devotee said it, so-called devotee said it, therefore it must be what Prabhupada said. For Prabhupada said, whoever said this in my name is a rascal. So we actually have to go to the source and understand what's actually to be done and what's not to be done, and it can't be done so superficially sometimes and done blindly. It has to be done with logic, reason, and investigation in a humble way. And then when we actually understand this is what actually Krishna wants, then we can do it. But sometimes we hear innocently, Prabhupada said this, or someone says that. We heard in a class, so-called Swami said this, and therefore, what do you think? Generally, it's that they didn't want to attack the Swami. They want you to attack the Swami. So, therefore, you have your reply, and then it's all over the internet. So-and-so attacks Swami during class. No, Swami says, usually it's not even what Swami said. It's what the person thought that Swami said. But anyhow, we have to, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, the basis, the Pramana is Shastra, Tasmat Shastra Pramanam Te Karya Karya Vyavyastito. So we have to check it out with Shastra. Shastra says Krishna is God, and even if Swami says Krishna is sometimes God and sometimes he's not, we have to get the proper understanding. Then we can make progress, but we shouldn't imitate. We should, whatever our duty is, if we become Brahmins eventually, we should act like a Brahmin. If we become whatever our services is, we should do it properly, that's all, for Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. My question is, how do you go about discussing or bringing up the information of, like, say, Prabhupada many times was very displeased when someone said Radhe, 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 Radhe in kirtan. When you bring it up, people become very upset.
So why should you bring it up?
Yeah.
Unless it's your service to bring it up, why should you want to? It's not your service usually to upset people. Therefore, we have this many. Krishna has spoke the whole 700 verses. We can just learn the 700 verses. We remember Anuvega Karam Vakyam Sattva Priyitam Jaya Swadhyay Vyasanam Jaiva Vangmana Tapuchate. The austerity of speech, and therefore, because we're speaking for Krishna, we should, our speech should have a certain quality. It should be truthful, satya, but it also should not anuvegam. It shouldn't agitate people's minds. So we can't be just truthful. We should also be pleasing. We should be beneficial. We should follow the scriptures. And we shouldn't agitate people's minds. So we should think before we speak whether it's going to have the qualities that Krishna has asked us that, or the quality of speech that Krishna asked us to have to speak on his behalf. Therefore, if it's only just going to agitate people's minds, they're not going to hear the truth, it won't be beneficial for them, nor will they be able to understand what the Vedas say. Therefore, we have to be a little careful. Of course, Prabhupada also writes, if you're the authority, you have some authority over the person, and sometimes you may speak. But if you're not, you shouldn't speak in such a way as just to agitate their minds. Anything else? Yes.
These types of situations that arise actually come from the association with others outside of our own sampradaya, you know, outside of our own lineage. But at the same time, devotees say that, you know, that you have to associate with everybody, you know, and they get angry at us and say, you're so narrow-minded, you will not associate with these others. But then in the association, this is what we pick up, these types of things, you know. Like, I was talking to one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, and he was saying he met one of these Maharajas who's, you know, not in our movement, but he was talking about the difference between Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, and I said, whoa, 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 you know, please. That's like, you know, you're trying to differentiate between Rupa Goswami and saying Rupa Goswami only gave the process, but Sanatana Goswami actually taught us about, you know, about Godhead, about things about Godhead. You know, I said, look, that's nonsense. Where do you get these ideas from? But, you know, they do that, these Maharajas. They try to impress others that ISKCON doesn't know, we know more, and, you know, make these points. But the thing is that this type of association is very dangerous. So isn't that where we get all these ideas from? We are to sing like this and sing like that from? It's from the other sampradayas.
Well, that wouldn't be so bad if it was just from the sampradayas. It could be from our favorite rock musician also. Blended in with our Krishna consciousness. Therefore, you know, we could see that because Prabhupada had understood the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he understood the mission that Srila Rupa Goswami had understood, and he presented it accordingly. It was successful. It was pure. And if we adulterate it, Prabhupada said, then it'll get adulterated. It won't be so effective. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.